I'm here with Adam Shoemaker and two musicians, baritone Ian McGuffin and pianist and composer Cassandra Kazor. And we're here to talk about an event for January 11th held at the Arcus Center for Social Justice on the campus of Kalamazoo College. Adam, you are on the faculty at Kalamazoo College. This is an event that you brought to Kalamazoo. Would you start us off by giving us a description of what it's all about?
Yeah, so this is called the Dried Tobacco Project, and it's a song cycle by a colleague of mine, Cassandra Kazor. And she has written this in collaboration with baritone Ian McGuffin as a performer. And it's really, I saw this as an opportunity to exercise my own organization and production skills, but to bring a unique song cycle and a unique new music performance to Kalamazoo College. And I approached the ARCA Center because it is essentially a social justice item, you know, here with the song cycle addressing LGBT, you know, rights and stories and kind of what can happen to people growing up in situations where they are unsupported and don't have a good framework for being essentially who they are. So it's a complicated thing as I'm searching for words. But after hearing the early sketches of Cassandra's work, I was like, we need to bring this to Kalamazoo. And I think Kalamazoo College is the perfect fit for this concert.
Would you talk about your relationship to Cassandra and how you developed this mutual musician trust over time?
Yeah, so she actually performed a musical, a mini musical I wrote in collaboration with Christine Idarosa. And I was searching for a piano player at about years ago, and everybody's like, "Well, you should find Cassandra because she can play, you know, pop or, you know, or classical or whatever." And I was like, "Okay." And so I basically said, "Hey, do you want to play this musical that I wrote?" And she's like, "Sure." And then it just kind of went downhill from there. And you know, she's a composer just like I am, and you know, she has played my own music. Last January, she did a concert for me. And she was the main performer with a work that she actually asked me to write that I finally finished years later. And we've just been supporting each other since then in this crazy new music world.
So this project made a lot of sense to bring to Kalamazoo College and to create an event that centered at the Arcus Center for Social Justice. This is more than just an evening concert. We should say right off the bat that it is a free concert at 7:30 on Wednesday. But there's additional benefit to be gained if you're interested. What can people do?
Yeah, so Ian and Cassandra are working up a workshop talking about the process of turning social justice issues into works of art. And it's a very in-depth concept and subject matter, and they'll be doing that at 5 p.m., also free to the community, students, faculty. And then just to elicit conversations, keep people around till 7:30, we're also having a light dinner, and the ARCA Center has requested that you RSVP for it. But it should be a great gathering for people who are interested and motivated and want to learn, not only to learn about issues that are important to our society today, but also to elicit conversations about those issues throughout the night.
Well, I'd like to chat with Cassandra and Ian here. Cassandra, you and Adam went to school at Western Michigan University, and you've landed in Chicago at Roosevelt University. And what year are you there now?
I'm in the second year of my master's right now.
In composition?
Yes, in music composition.
You're in a field that is traditionally and currently extremely male-dominated. I was just curious about your experience as a woman composer and what that road's going to be like.
Sure. I've thought a lot about this, actually, so thank you for asking. As Adam mentioned earlier, I do play pop music as well. That's kind of what's paying for my master's degree now is pop music performance, and that is also a male-dominated field. So a majority of my musical compositions up to this point and my multimedia art have been dealing with subjects of women's safety, women's rights, and women's empowerment. So in that way, it kind of enables me as a minority in my field to talk about those issues very fervently. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of great support from my male and female colleagues in dealing with that subject matter.
So you have done a lot of pieces that for you really do bring social issues into your work.
Mm-hmm.
You're not trying to be to write in a style that emulates Beethoven or Chopin. This is modern music, right?
Yes, it's modern music, and I feel very comfortable with keeping one foot in kind of the pop music idiom. And on the flip side, on the academic side, I guess I would err more to the experimental and expressionist type of aesthetic as well. So I'm finding ways to fuse those two in a way that is genuine and natural sounding, and at the same time bringing issues that I very much care about to the forefront of my and my listeners' minds. I take music, I put it in non-traditional spaces. I work with different women's organizations in Chicago that support the arts. So I'm taking a lot of my music outside of the concert hall into gallery spaces, restaurants, bars, things like that. So that's a lot of what I've been doing lately.
Well, and now we're at the part on your path, your journey, where you've come across an amazing set of poems and a musical collaborator that is deeply tied to that, Ian McGuffin here. Are you the one who introduced Cassandra to these poems?
Yes, and it's actually kind of a funny story how we stumbled across this. We both go to Roosevelt University. I am also in the second year master's program for voice performance. And we were meeting for entrance exams. We were going to study, and we just had this discussion. Hey, you're a composer. I'm a singer. We should just do something, just to do something, you know. Her first request was, well, bring me something to write. You know, bring me some text so we could kind of draw from this creative material. And I come from a largely classical background in literature, in voice development. And so my first thought was, I really love the Holy Sonnets by John Donne, and we should set that. That would be great. And she looked at it, handed it back to me and said, no. So I was like, oh, okay, well, let's... And this is when my friend, Will Brooks, who is the author of the source text of this concert we're doing, he had just recently published his book. And I was like, well, you know, I needed to give it a read because he's a friend of mine. And I was reading through the poetry and I was, this is astounding. This is astounding material. And I want to sing it. And so I brought it to Cass and we kind of ruminated over it and really thought that it was an amazing piece of work, piece of art that we could really create something with. And so we took selections from the book that specifically pertained to LGBTQ rights, because it's something that has been in popular media recently at the time we were creating it. And it's something that's, unfortunately, the discussions are going to have to keep going because we're still in a state politically, as a community, as a world community, where this minority group is still suffering greatly, and we still need to have these discussions.
If I can bring it back, who is Will Brooks?
Oh, Will Brooks, again, another funny story. Will Brooks and I grew up together in central Kentucky, went to the same high school. We sang in the same musical theater program. We were in the same band program. We were very close. He was probably one of my closest friends when I was growing up. And when I first met him, he and I were both still very, very young, and he hadn't come into his own as far as knowing what this feeling inside of him was, because it was not the same as the social pressures that we both faced growing up in the South, in the Bible Belt, in this largely Christian community that was perhaps not as accepting of alternative lifestyles, or what they would deem alternative lifestyles. And so I came to know him as a friend, and then I saw him on this journey of self-discovery. And we kept in contact until now. He lives currently in Las Vegas, Nevada, with his now husband, Lee Sparger, and they are a lovely couple, and we are very excited to host them because we're also doing a concert later in February in Chicago, and we're bringing them in, and we're going to have a talk back and a dinner, and we're going to hang out and just have a good time.
Was it ever a kind of worrisome as a friend to have another friend from childhood ask you to look at their work and, you know, read their book, knowing that, you know, what if it's terrible?
I think he, and even unto this point, he's been surprised with the process because he is such... He makes art for art's sake. He doesn't make it for commercial profit's sake. And so the fact that we've taken his work and it's becoming something even more than we've imagined has been a surprise and a blessing to all of us, I think.
And I think also the honesty of his work, there would be no fear of something being bad if it's honest.
Since you're here in the studio and are going to play a few selections of this larger work for us to give us a taste of this new music. Are there any other things we should know in advance? The poetry deals with experiences he had as a young man, being gay.
Yes, and just on that note, it's a very viscerally evocative image that he's painting with his words. That's really the core of the artistic expression that we wanted. And there are images like the dried tobacco barn of a rope, of kind of even being in the church. You hear a lot of those kind of similar sounds that you might hear as far as choral writing, pentatonicism, things of that nature. And so this song cycle is packed with sound imagery. And this story is not necessarily his story. I mean, he definitely went through so much, and I know personally so many struggles that he had to face, but he is also calling on the struggles of his community, of the LGBTQ community. And he was writing some of this poetry when we were both in high school, and there was an epidemic of suicide for young individuals in the LGBTQ community. And some of that imagery comes from that time in his life where he felt as if he was in danger, not only from his surroundings, but from himself as well.
And the piece itself follows that trajectory from feeling oppressed, feeling afraid, being bullied, all the way kind of to where he is now, where he is very happily buried. He's at peace with his own past, and he's at peace with where he is now. So the piece compositionally goes from dissonance to total consonance, showing kind of his own journey and the journey of the text that we chose for this piece.
In this introductory opening movement that, Cassandra, you're about to play, do you feel you give away things that we might hear later in the piece?
Yes, something about this entire work that I'm particularly proud of is that almost all of the material runs throughout all 8 movements of the piece. So you can hear snippets of the main motive everywhere. So this sets up kind of the centerfold of the piece after which the piece was named.
The name of the central poem is Dried Tobacco, which gives the entire work its name. Here in the studio at WMUK, we'll hear composer Cassandra Kazor perform the opening movement for solo piano. live in the studio here at WMUK, that was Cassandra Kazor on the piano and performing one of her own works. We're listening to the opening movement of Dried Tobacco, which is a suite for voice and piano with text by American author Will Brooks. Cassandra, that short few minutes of music contains volumes. It seemed like you were using blocks of sound and then melody and ways to combine levels and worlds in this piece.
Yeah, certainly. Something that I appreciate very much as a composer, I love to hear not only different levels of sound, but different levels of affect. So within this, there's not only melody moving horizontally and sound moving vertically in different densities, but there are also layers of darkness and dissonance. And at the end, hopefully you could hear that little moments of consonance emerge. So throughout, even though this opening part of the piece is very, very dark, I'm foreshadowing to the end, perhaps, that there might be a happier ending outcome.
What might we say to prepare us for the centerpiece of the work, which is what you'll share with us next? We need to be thinking of a person in great pain, mm-hmm. Mental pain, and the imagery involved. Give us a sneak peek.
Well, this is an individual who is in the LGBTQ community of a somewhat ambiguous age. It's a little bit indicative of someone perhaps who's younger, who's less established in their self-identity, which is part of the struggle, and someone who has faced bullying, harm, oppression within his immediate surroundings. The very image of dried tobacco is very important in that you can hear the wind rushing through the boards on the side of the plank. You can see the dried tobacco. You can smell kind of this surrounding milieu of the South. And there's a peaceful nature to it, I think, as well, which is this person is walking themselves to the gallows, in essence. And so that's the kind of imagery that Cassandra so wonderfully expressed in this movement.
Yes, in particular because Will and Ian, both growing up in the South, there was almost a necessity for the sounds of the South to come into it, hence the use of the pentatonic material that you're going to hear as well, manipulated in many forms throughout the piece.
Well, rather than talk too much, why don't we share it with listeners? This is Ian McGuffin and Cassandra Kazor at WMUK with Dried Tobacco.
Like between your hands.
Each fiber pulls and tears at the skin on your fingers, carving the surface. Tug as I tie each knot over, under, loop around, pull tight. perhaps make a hangman's noose. But I only rap 10, 'cause that's how many times you said I should die. 10 raps won't kill me instantly. That's fine by me, 'cause Lord knows I haven't suffered enough. You laugh at me, you spit on me, you push me down and call me names. That should run off. Only Satan's tongue. But you speak them anyway. Ten wraps of a rope and one knot on a barn rafter. It's quiet in the rafters. No cows or horses. Only tobacco from last fall's harvest. Hanging low, just like my rope. Do you know what a rope feels like around your neck? Imagine hanging, dangling, gasping for a breath you know you can't inhale. My feet kick because I can feel the horror of my heart beating faster and faster. 10 times you say, as I swing from the rafters, as I feel my eyes close and my breathing stop. Now, all I am is your hatred, swinging from a rope among the dried tobacco.
That's original music by Cassandra Kazor, performed by Cassandra at our piano, and with Ian McGuffin performing the text by Will Brooks. This is original music that has yet to be premiered in Kalamazoo. It will be as a full concert of the full 8-movement work on Wednesday, January 11th. 7:30 p.m. is the public concert, and you're also invited free of charge to a workshop on how to create pieces of art with a social justice intention. And there's also food provided and a concert at 7:30 p.m. I just killed the whole wonderful magic you just gave us in the concert. The piece is so filled with tension, and just like tension on a rope, if I'm not taking it too far, I'm very struck by the imagery of a rope used so many ways here. That you ask these questions: do you know what a rope feels like? How many rough sketches did this take?
My personal compositional process is to ruminate over something for a very, very long time and then write it in one fell swoop. So after reading the text, analyzing the text, kind of thinking about how I could do justice to such a powerful text, and deciding upon the materials, I thought that especially in this movement, text painting was integral to empathizing with the speaker and to being there with the speaker. So thanks to Will, actually, the piece kind of ended up writing itself through his very strong imagery. Yeah.
Ian, this is a piece that requires your imagination to both, you know, perform the piece and interpret the text. And it's a kind of a scary place to go to, I would think.
Absolutely.
Is it because it's not that far-fetched?
No, it's not far-fetched at all. And just as we mentioned previously, this is where I grew up. These are the images that I saw in my own formative years. And so when I'm singing this, when I'm performing it, it's almost like I'm walking through my own past. And that plays a role in how I feel and how it makes me kind of just well up inside. And then imagining someone who has experienced this in a similar situation, but someone who has gone through this oppression. It's very narrative. It takes you from someone who is in the midst of the worst time of their life. And eventually it brings hope, but there is this journey, you know, as we all have journeys, this is the journey of someone who has no other way out. And so, yes, it's been an entirely involved process for me, and it's been growing too. It's a very organic piece. Cassandra and I actually joke that this piece becomes bigger in multiple ways that every time we perform it. And
I added a bit to it about a week before the premiere.
Yes, and I very much appreciate that.
Just brought in a whole new part of text. I texted him at like some ungodly hour in the morning, like 2 or 3 in the morning, just like, you need to trust me.
Yes.
No explanation. And then I brought him the new text the next day.
It's like, I'll do it if you do John Donne next time.
Right. I've learned to trust her and just do it.
Yeah, and I gotta say that I've written a lot of music, and I do tend to push my performers as far as I can push them. And up to this point, this has been the piece in which I asked a performer to go above and beyond what one would normally expect. So I must commend Ian for taking on such a heavy work and taking the time to interpret it.
I'd like to get the input of Adam here too, as someone who is probably a valuable set of ears for you. And I understand that actually you've brought this to the classroom, this piece.
Mm, yep. So, you know, I teach at Kalamazoo College, and I teach music theory there. And it's the things I realize about new music, especially new music with a bit of a mission or a bit of a story. It can be so powerful that it can kind of redefine for some people how they either, first of all, view new music, or second of all, view somebody else's experience. And when I brought the music to the classroom, I just basically said, here's an example of what I'm working on right now to bring to Kalamazoo College. I kind of just left it at that. And And I said this is off of a book of poems written by this guy named Will Brooks, who is a gay man who grew up in the South. You can imagine with that, automatically that's a conflict. I just kind of left it at that and let them listen to the words. And I actually had the score up too, since, you know, it's a theory class, so scores are good. And the students, I think, if I could speak generally to all of their varied opinions, we had a whole discussion that lasted about 30 minutes afterwards. That's all the time we had left. Probably would have gone further. But they were kind of blown away that the whole experience of listening to a demo recording of the song cycle wasn't so much about the chords or the melody or, you know, this cool thing about the music, but the music almost transcended itself and to deliver that message, which was the cool experience. And that's the reason I wanted to bring it to Kalamazoo College, is because these little snippets I got from Cassandra and what she was telling me, the ideas about it, I was just like, you know, this is the kind of stuff that needs to be heard more, needs to be experienced, because it transcends the process of, well, it's a contemporary classical song cycle. And it goes more into, here's somebody's experience that I know personally for me, I don't have and I never will have. But it's important that I understand it. And I think that's why we're all here.
Finally, before we are left with the beautiful final song from today's session, I'm getting little warning signals in myself about referring to the South as this one big place that across the board treats people who are gay badly. I wondered if we should say that's more nuanced than that, that there are resources for people, and it's just as bad in places in Michigan, and avoid that the unfortunate northern you know, smugness or whatever that we really haven't earned.
Yankees, you meant to say Yankees.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we really have not earned any sort of moral high ground, I don't think.
It's so, like Cassandra said, I'm from the South, and this is a message that is so important to me, and it's something that even since my childhood, it's something I had to grow into, because you do grow up with these preconceived notions. I'm the son of a pastor. I grew up in the church. My first memories are from singing in the pews from the hymn books. It's and growing up in a Southern Baptist tradition, people of, again, alternative lifestyles, if anything, at baseline, it's a confusing thing to approach. And if anything, it's just easier not to talk about it. And that is something of the scene that I grew up in, is if it's too hard to talk about, you just don't do it. But I also grew up in a community that is very loving. I was just telling someone the other day about my own parents. My father, he's also the director of a homeless shelter. And so he is the most kind, loving, caregiving person I have met in my life. And he is a huge inspiration for me to live my life that way as well. And so it is a little bit unfair to say that the South, the Bible Belt, especially the Appalachian region, is just full of hate and bigotry, because that's not the case. And largely it's a case of ignorance. It's because, even mentioning Will again, when we were in high school, he was, if I remember correctly, the only gay man that I could pick out of a community that was fairly large. And even he wasn't out except to his friends. And so not seeing this, not having it present within everyone's life, it's a matter of ignorance, confusion, and not talking about the things that are perhaps too hard. And I think that's the source of perhaps these preconceived notions. And also, these preconceived notions are a reality, a strong reality. And that's why we need to have this kind of art music.
This dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my work as a composer as well, working with difficult issues, I think exactly what Ian said, when there is a stigma about something, when we don't talk about it, then it becomes kind of a dirty word or a dirty concept that we shouldn't be talking about. But the more we can place, you know, women's issues on the table, the more we can place LGBT issues on the table and just say, here, look at this, let's talk about it, dialogue can often lead to a lot of growth. So I think it's important.
Well, thank you both for coming in, sharing the music, and talking about why it's important to you and the message behind it. So I just finally would like an introduction to this last song. Where do we go after Dried Tobacco?
Well, only way to go is up, really. So as I mentioned earlier, the entire eight movement work goes from dissonance to consonance. This is the third to last musical movement in the piece. So this is the turning point toward coming to a peaceful place and a loving place. And it's aptly titled Letting Go. So it is in itself a love song. The text is a love song about I will never let you go. But Ian and I have kind of been talking about all these layers to the text too, where it's not only a I will never let you as the identifier, the self, or the partner go, but also the letting go of everything that came before. So it's the uplifting turning point in the work.
Did you have any final thoughts on that?
Yeah. This turning point is a matter of acceptance. And that is, not only is this a narrative, not only should people feel, but they should take this and run with it. Love is an action. It's a verb. It's not just a noun. And that's essentially what we want to express, particularly with this one, and going on to the final movements as well. But if you listen to this music and you're struck by it, then we want you to have these discussions, to take action, to find your local support groups for minorities, any minority, any people who need help, and just make the world a better place.
My hour.
try today and tomorrow. My forever and my always. I will never let you go. Come bury me.